This is your life, episode 51. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Well, first of all, thanks to everyone for participating in last week's episode, my 50th. Thanks to each of the people who submitted a question. As I promised, I sent each of them an autographed copy of my book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about something that is very, very important to me, and that is how to build or rebuild trust in any situation. You know, trust is so crucial to every relationship in every situation. If you don't have it, it makes it very difficult to move things forward. And if you've lost it, things can go south very, very fast. And we're going to explore all of that and more in this episode of This Is Your Life. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You can find out more at platformuniversity.com. If you're already a member, I hope you were able to participate in the live Q&A call we had last night. Each month, I answer a range of platform-building questions from our members, and we recorded a terrific call, and we'll be posting it along with the transcript early next week. If you aren't a member, check us out. It's only $25 a month, and I promise it will help you build a platform faster and more easily than you could on your own, or your money back. I personally guarantee it. Well, trust is to an organization what oil is to a car engine. It keeps the moving parts from seizing up and stopping forward motion. But trust is not something you can take for granted. In fact, it takes months, sometimes years to build. And unfortunately, you can lose it overnight. Some people have a knack for building trust. When they speak, others take them at their word. And when they're absent, people speak well of them. Even when they make a mistake, people give them the benefit of the doubt. Wouldn't you like to have those kind of relationships? I know I would. Well, others are just the opposite. People distrust what they say. They are suspicious of their motives. They interpret every comment, every email, and every action is one more reason the person cannot be trusted. And we all know people like that. Well, years ago, I had just such a person reporting to me, and I'm going to call him Justin. That's not his real name. But Justin started out well. He had come to our company with an impressive resume. People assumed he was competent. But over time, he single-handedly destroyed his own reputation. He didn't keep his word, for starters. He was always late to meetings. He didn't follow through on his commitments, and worse, he never owned up to any of it. He always tried to spin the facts in his favor, and from his perspective, the other party simply misunderstood what he had said, or the circumstances were beyond his control, and those are what had kept him from fulfilling his commitments. Unfortunately, I put up with Justin's behavior longer than I should have. No one trusted him. First, his peers began to complain. Then his direct reports, risking his wrath, began to complain, and they started coming to me and telling me about what they were facing with him. And even my own boss didn't trust Justin, and I was the last man standing, unfortunately. Well, I finally woke up, and I realized that others were beginning to doubt my ability as a manager. And I guess I had hoped that I could turn him around, and I'd even coached him on specific behaviors, but he just couldn't seem to get it. So I took a deep breath and I did the only thing I could do, and that was I fired him. And the only one surprised was Justin. Everyone else patted me on the back and I'm sure wondered what had taken me so long to get to that point. But things shouldn't have deteriorated to that point. Justin could have been salvaged if only he had owned what was happening. And he could have taken specific steps, steps I had encouraged him to take to rebuild trust with his direct reports, with his colleagues, ultimately with my boss, and with me. If you're in a situation where you need to build trust or even rebuild it, here are four specific steps you can take. And these will work with your employees, they'll work with your colleagues, they'll work with your customers, your vendors, or even your spouse. I've observed them in every possible situation, and they just flat out work. I guarantee it. So step number one is keep your word. I know that sounds simple, but this is where it starts. People have to learn that they can count on you to deliver on your promises. And if you commit to following up on something, then do it. No excuses. If you can't do it, proactively let the other person know. You've got to follow through. You've got to keep your word. For example, Terry, last week I told you that I would get back to you with a proposal. However, I'm waiting for a bid to come in through an outside vendor, and it looks like that might add a week to my schedule. In my experience, people are usually very forgiving if you take the initiative to proactively communicate. However, if they have to chase you down, you lose points. You can write that down. Your reputation will take a hit. Also, be prompt to meetings. Now, maybe you've never considered that as a part of keeping your word, but it is. Tardiness erodes trust. Sometimes circumstances beyond your control prevent this, but you can't allow it to become a habit. And if you're late, please apologize, show some empathy, and explain briefly why you were late. But this is all a part of keeping your word, and it's step one to building or rebuilding trust. Step two, tell the truth. I know this sounds simple too, but it's harder than it sounds. Most of us like to think of ourselves as truth tellers, but it's easy to round the numbers up, spin the facts, exaggerate, enhance, or conveniently leave out the evidence that doesn't support our position. But if we're going to build trust, then we have to commit ourselves to telling the truth, even when it's difficult or embarrassing. You know, I found that people are more forgiving than you think. Witness all the celebrities who have publicly blown it, apologized, and received a pass. They don't expect you to be perfect, but they do expect you to acknowledge your mistakes and to come clean when you screw up. By the way, this is particularly important if you're a parent. I used to think that that was a sign of weakness when I would reveal to my children that I had blown it. And the thing is, they knew I had blown it. They knew I had made a mistake or that I had done something inappropriate. But when I admitted it, I suddenly got aligned with them because I was confessing my humanity and my own sinfulness, and they recognized it, and it added credibility because suddenly I got it. I recognized it. Sam Moore, my predecessor as the CEO of Thomas Nelson, used to say, "Tell me the good, the bad, and the ugly." And whenever I needed a decision from him, I would always give him both sides of the argument. I refused to withhold relevant information. I didn't exaggerate. I always rounded down so that if he did check up on me, he would find out that the number was actually higher than what I had reported to him. Then I would make my recommendation and tell him why. And over time, this built trust. He didn't have to ask someone else to get the other side of the story. He wasn't constantly second-guessing me or feeling like he had to double-check the information that I was giving him. And as a result, I usually received his approval on the spot. Step number three, be transparent. People will not trust you unless you learn to share yourself, warts and all. You've got to take a risk and be vulnerable. And this creates rapport, and rapport builds trust. Now, be warned, you can use this as a gimmick or a technique. And if you do, people will see it as manipulation. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being authentic, being transparent, and revealing your true self. The reason this builds trust is because you're demonstrating trust. You're taking the initiative to go first. In essence, you're saying, look, I trust you. I'm taking off my mask and I'm showing you my true self. Some of it, frankly, isn't very pretty, but I'm willing to take the risk believing you will still accept me. In other words, you're giving the other person the gift of going second by going first. And in my experience, this kind of self-revelation almost always gives the other person the courage to take off their mask too. And that builds trust. The relationship is deepened. It goes to a new level. So step number three, be transparent. Step number four, give without any strings attached. In other words, be generous. Nothing builds trust like love. And maybe you're thinking to yourself, well, what does love have to do with the workplace? Well, as Tim Sanders points out in his great book, one of the top 10 business books I've ever read, Love is the Killer App, as Tim Sanders points out, love has everything to do with the workplace. You have to be willing to share your knowledge, your contacts, and your compassion. He talks about those three things without expecting anything in return. The more you take the initiative to give, the more it builds trust. And giving lets others know that you know it's not all about you. And from this, people learn that they can trust you because you have their best interests at heart. This is so important for people to be convinced of this in their heart, deep inside, that you've got their best interests at heart. You're not merely looking out for yourself. You're going to take care of them too, even when it costs you something, whether it's an inconvenience or some time or even some money. But like being transparent, you got to be careful how you give. Otherwise, it's going to be perceived as manipulation. You've got to make sure your motives are pure and you can't expect something in return. So four steps. Number one, keep your word. Number two, tell the truth. Number three, be transparent. And number four, give without any strings attached. You know, trust can always be rebuilt. And granted, in some situations, it can take years. It takes doing the right things over a long period of time. I remember talking to a man that I knew years ago who had been guilty of embezzling. But he finally came to his senses. He went to his boss, his former boss, confessed what he had done, and he repaid all the money down to the last penny. And his boss forgave him. It was almost instantaneous. They cried, they hugged it. You know, it was a beautiful reconciliation. But the people around the boss didn't trust the man who had embezzled. And it took him years of doing the right thing to rebuild that trust. And I remember asking him at one point, I said, you know, it's clear that you've been forgiven and restored by the boss, but what about everybody else? I said, how do you think about that? I mean, I was just really curious. And he said, well, I realize that it's going to take years and that it's me keeping my word, doing what's right, and doing that over a long period of time. And he was right. And I saw it one by one. The executives that had been opposed to him and had been suspicious came back around to trust him. And he ended up being a very productive, excellent, excellent employee. And he was forever changed and forever changed me and our organization because of his attitude and his willingness to rebuild trust. But in most cases, it won't take that long. Relationships, I believe, can be turned around quickly if you own the problem and take the steps I've outlined above. With that, let's get to some listener questions. And by the way, let me start this segment by first thanking everyone who submitted a question this week. I'm sorry if I don't include your question in this episode. I received 31 separate voicemail messages, and I just couldn't include them all. So please try again. I'll do my best to keep it fair and to try to get your question on at some point. But we've got lots and lots of great questions. I think that shows a lot of listener engagement, and I don't take that for granted. I'm very grateful because this program is what it is because of your participation and because of your support. So thank you. The first question comes from Alan.
Hi, Michael. It's Alan Williams from Hampshire in the UK here. I blog and write at tontowilliams.com. My question for you is this. How do you allow someone to regain trust when perhaps they've done something or a series of things that's caused you to lose your trust in them and their leadership? I'd be interested to hear what you've got to say on this subject. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Ellen, for me, I guess it's the reverse of what I shared earlier, and that is that I want to see them keep their word. I want to see them keep their commitments. I want to see them be transparent and tell the truth and be generous and all the things that I suggested you do when you need to rebuild trust. But I would also say that when I'm trying to allow for somebody to rebuild trust, I'm pretty forgiving. And I'm that way, I think, because I know my own heart. I know how many times I've failed. I know how many times I've let other people down. I know how many times I've exaggerated the truth or haven't been forthcoming with all the facts. And so I know that's human nature and that's a tendency that all of us have. So I tend to be hard on myself, but merciful and generous toward others. At least that's what I aspire to. And I get angry like everybody else, and there are times when I'm not like that. But I would say in general, over the course of my life, that's how I've been. And I would encourage you to do that as well, is be forgiving, give people the benefit of the doubt. But also, if necessary, sit down and explain with them what it's going to take for them to rebuild trust with you. Because what I don't want to do is just be somebody, a boss, who's excusing a lack of performance or excusing lies or an exaggeration of the truth. Those things you have to confront. You have to set the standard, and then you have to enforce it, and you have to give people a very clear path back. Now, if they don't take that path back, then you have to take other action. You have to escalate it, and that gets into a whole other set of issues that perhaps we can talk about on a future episode. The next question comes from Chip.
Hey, Michael. My name is Chip Hutchison. I'm in South Carolina, and I have a question about trust. Then my question is this. Even if I hold myself out to be the most trustworthy person around and I'm dealing with a client relationship or a prospective client relationship, how can I tell if that client or prospective client I'm dealing with has the ability to trust at all? Now, so I don't get caught going down rabbit trails trying to convince this person that I'm trustworthy, where do I cut it off when I can realize that perhaps no matter what I do or say, I'm spinning my wheels and perhaps wasting my time? So I look forward to hearing your feedback, and I appreciate all you do. Thank you.
Chip, I remember I had a client years ago that was just like what you described. She couldn't trust me. She didn't trust her husband. She didn't trust anybody. And at first I took it personally, and it was really an affront to me. And I thought, what have I done to lose her trust? I mean, I've hardly had a chance to gain it, but I certainly haven't done anything to lose it. And I don't understand why she has me under the microscope and is grilling me and doesn't trust me and is suspicious. And suddenly I realized it really wasn't about me. It was about her. It was issues. You know, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but there were issues from her past that frankly still trouble her to this day. But I do think that I could have discerned that probably early on if I'd asked more questions and if I'd listened to the way that she talked about the other people who had worked for her in the past, I probably would have gotten some clues in that. So I would say listen carefully. I don't demand trust on the front end of a relationship. I don't think you can do that. It is something that has to be earned over time. Hopefully you don't start in a deficit like I did. And I think that's what you're looking for. You just want a level playing field where you've got a chance that as you perform, you're going to gain trust and the client or the prospective client is going to give you more and more responsibility, or even your boss, more and more responsibility over time as you prove yourself. That's normal. That's how it should be. Don't be surprised at the beginning of a relationship if you have to earn it. That's how it should be. And I would say if the shoe was on the other foot, if you're the boss, I don't recommend that you just delegate to people and then don't inspect, but instead abdicate. Abdication is not a good strategy as a boss or as a client. You've got to inspect. And then as people earn your trust, you can give them more and more responsibility so that eventually they get to that level 5 of delegation, which we talked about in a previous episode. But I would listen very carefully on the front end of the relationship, because nobody wants a high maintenance client. As that viral video said so well, ain't nobody got time for that. And you don't either. So great question. And I would just listen carefully. The next question comes from Evan.
Hey, Michael, it's Evan Umberger at TrainSpeakCoach.com from Abilene, Texas. What methods do you suggest for rebuilding your trust momentum? Let's say that you're recovering from a traumatic family event a few months ago and just now able to rebuild your relationships. Thank you so much for your insights.
Evan, I'm not sure I'm going to answer your question because I'm not sure I've got enough information. It sounds like a really interesting question, by the way, because I think trust in families is something that ebbs and flows, and oftentimes couples lose it. Parents lose it with their children, and then everything really does fall apart. And that's the first thing that goes is trust, and it's often the first thing you have to regain if you want to rebuild the relationship. You know, one step I didn't add when I was talking about the 4 steps is to create empathy or to listen. And I think this can be huge in a family context, is just to listen, to ask questions, to not be defensive and not feel like you've got to defend your position or what you did or what you said, but simply to ask questions and try to get inside the head of the person you're talking to and to feel what they felt. Because obviously if there's pain there, if there's frustration, if there's anger, you don't have to sit in judgment of it. You don't have to be judged by it. You don't have to defend yourself, but to understand it is often the first step in rebuilding that trust. So I would just listen and ask questions and try to understand and try to the best of your ability to not react, but to reflect and give a thoughtful response. The next question comes from Jane.
Hi, Michael. This is Jane Graham calling from West Michigan. I blog about faith at girlmeetspaper.com. I'm calling on behalf of a leader in my life who's struggling through some messy staffing issues and has received some hateful responses because of that. However, the folks who are speaking out certainly don't know all sides of the issue. How can this leader show that he is caring and compassionate and a man of integrity without betraying the privacy issues of all those involved? Thank you.
This is a fabulous question. We could probably spend an entire episode on this, but I do think as a leader, you first have a duty of responsibility to the person who has shared with you something intimate or private that they wouldn't want shared with somebody else. And sometimes that means that other people are going to misunderstand. And I think that this is part of the burden, if you want to put it that way, that we have as leaders to bear. You know, we have to be willing to be misunderstood. You know, it's not our job to go around and make sure that everybody understands what we're doing and what our motives are and that they're okay with what we're doing. You know, sometimes courage requires that we do the right thing and not betray a privacy, not explain all the facts, with the belief that in due course, over time, we'll be vindicated, the truth will come out, and it'll be all okay. And because I know you write about faith, let me just talk to you about it from a faith perspective. I think this is one of the things that to me is extraordinary about Jesus' example. 1 Peter chapter 2 talks about even though he was falsely accused, condemned, and not only that, but it led to his death. But he didn't feel the need to defend himself. That passage in 1 Peter chapter 2 says that in spite of that, in spite of the fact that he was being reviled, he didn't revile in return. In fact, he didn't open his mouth. And I think that sometimes as a leader, that quiet courage, that willingness to be faithful to the people who are not present, that willingness to not reveal everything because it might hurt others is a real sign and a real mark of leadership. And sometimes it leads to injustice. And sometimes it leads to personal hurt on our own part. But we have to be willing to bear that. And that's part of what we're called to as leaders. And it's okay. And I think it's sets a good example for other people too. And by the way, when the truth does come out, it builds even more trust, not only with the original person that you could have betrayed to save your own skin, but it also creates credibility with the people who misunderstood you and maybe falsely accused you and suddenly realize, oh my gosh, you were acting in not only my best interest, but in the best interest of the person whose privacy you were protecting. The next question comes from Kimberly.
Hi, Michael. This is Kimberly Wiggins from Atlanta, Georgia. And my website is practicallivingprayers.com. My question is about building trust. When building trust, I know it's important to be transparent and to share your story. Is there such a thing as being too or overly transparent? Thanks. Bye.
Kimberly, this kind of ties in with Jane's question, and the short answer is yes. I think it is possible to be too transparent. I think if we're being transparent and we're breaking a privacy or breaking a confidence that we have with someone else, obviously that's inappropriate. If we're saying something that's embarrassing either to us or to other people, then it's inappropriate, even though it goes under the umbrella of being transparent. Just anything inappropriate. And I don't know, this is more art than science, but I do think it's possible to be too transparent, and to try to be transparent for the sake of being transparent is not good. But I think if it's about revealing our humanity and being honest with where we struggle and where we're really still on the journey, I think that's all good. But I do think that we have to be appropriate and listen to the people that are closest to us in our lives. Because I know my wife will tell me, or one of my daughters will tell me, if I'm sharing something that just is, you know, too much information, they often say TMI, you know, which causes me to dial it back. So just because you have a commitment to being transparent doesn't mean you have to have a commitment to telling everything. Some things are best left unsaid. Some things are best left said later. Again, it's art, not science. Great question. The next one comes from Christine.
This is Christine Canavan from St. Louis, Missouri. My website is 1%.fr. This question is about rebuilding trust. When your own boss should you let your clients know you've been unhappy with your own performance and have given yourself a reprimand?
You know, it probably depends on the nature of the offense or the performance, the lack of performance. But I would say in general, yes. As long as this doesn't become a habit, or it's not a technique that you're using basically to save your own skin when you're just not performing. Because over time, I don't care if you're calling a flag on yourself, if you keep doing it over and over again, at some point the client's going to say, look, you know, I appreciate the fact that your performance is not up to your own standards, but the truth is it's not up to my standards either, and that's a problem, and we're going to have to exit this relationship. So you don't want that. But occasionally, particularly when you have a high level of performance, usually, and something got in the way of that, I would much rather the vendor or the professional that I've employed to work with me comes straight to me and tells me exactly what the issue is. Because in the absence of that information, people often create their own narrative about what's happening, and it may not correspond to reality. So I think that sometimes you can explain that. I just had that happen recently with someone who wasn't able to fulfill on a project that we had agreed on the deadline. And they came to me proactively and they said, look, I'm not going to be able to do this. I've had an issue in my family. And they explained to me what the situation was. In this particular case, it was someone whose sister had gotten really sick, and they ended up having to take care of the kids while the sister was healing up. And I appreciated that, and it was fine. And this is a person that normally responds at a very high level of performance, and therefore I knew it was an exception, and I appreciated her proactivity. In fact, it was characteristic of how our relationship is, and that built trust. The next question comes from Matt.
Hello, Michael. My name is Matt Cochran. I blog at MatthewJCochran.com. And what I do in ministry is I serve in the small groups ministry. I'm over all of the life groups at our church. So I'm not only a life group leader myself, but I lead the leaders. As far as rebuilding trust, what I've had happen recently is where one of my life group leaders, whose role is to really shepherd the people that are under her, has lost the trust of several of her members through an action that she took that caused some hurt and pain. And my question for you is, how do I help someone else that I lead regain the trust of someone that they lead? And thank you for your podcast. I very much appreciate all of your guidance, and I look forward to hearing your answer. Thank you.
Matt, great question. And this often happens, doesn't it? And it's probably going to be that the people that you're leading, you're going to have to help them just like I'm going to help you right now. But I would listen to this podcast, and I would articulate these four steps that I've shared with you. And you know, you may find that there are five or six, and I would just ask that question. Are there things that Michael missed in his podcast? Are there some other things that would help us to rebuild trust? And then just have a discussion or a conversation around that. So create a context. If you can't do that with the group, and if this is just one specific person, like it sounds like it is, you could even go to them and use this as an opportunity to coach them and to give them hope, first of all, that that trust can be rebuilt. And she can win with the people that are in her small group, the people who have lost trust in her. But she's got to understand some of the things that I lay out and begin to implement them. And if she will do that, she can rebuild the trust. Now, I wouldn't just coach her and then, you know, wash your hands of it and think that everything's taken care of. I would explain these things to her, maybe even do some role playing, but for sure check back up with her and see how it's going. And maybe even if you have the opportunity and you can do this in a way that's appropriate, check with some of the members of her group to see how she's doing. And there's a book that I'm reading right now where there's some examples like this that would be hugely helpful to you. And it's a book called Just Trust. I just started it. Gail, my wife, gave it to me and said, you've got to listen to this. We have it as a audio book. And so this morning I started listening to it, and there was an example just like this in the first or the second chapter. So that may be a book you want to read as well. So great question. The next one comes from Mike.
Hey, Michael, this is Mike Burns, and I blog about living well and focusing on what's most important at theothersideofcomplexity.com. So one of the things that's been very important for me personally when I've been trying to build trust and relationships is the idea of being loyal to the absent, so that if I'm speaking about someone who isn't present in the room, that I do so in such a way that if they were to overhear, they would say that my approach was respectful. So what I found is that it helps the person that I'm speaking with know that I would do the same thing for them as well. So What I do realize, though, is that there are times when we have to discuss people's performance or behavior and manage pretty sensitive information. So my question is, do you have any things to remember or best practices for deciding how you discuss that type of sensitive information and still maintain that loyalty and trust? Thanks for your input.
Absolutely, that's an important principle, is being loyal to those who are not present. However, as a manager, as a leader, the way I apply that is if I'm speaking to somebody over whom I have no responsibility, or I'm speaking about somebody over whom I have no responsibility, or if I'm speaking to somebody who's not part of the problem or part of the solution, then it really is just gossip. But if I'm talking to somebody about someone they're leading, or if I'm talking, for example, to my HR director back when I used to have one, about somebody in the organization, that wasn't gossip. That was our job. We were trying to resolve a problem. So I think that if you'll use kind of that rubric, if you will, about being loyal to those who are not present, but over whom you have no responsibility, then I think that that makes sense. But if they can be part of the solution, and I mean genuinely so, part of the solution, then go ahead and talk to them. Now, we'll tell you there have been those situations where I've had people come to me and want to talk about, for example, a peer, and they want to kind of tattle on them. Sometimes I've just picked up the phone and called that other person into the meeting and made that first person confront the second person and for us to have a conversation. It's amazing how when you move it to that level, suddenly the problem goes away, or you have a chance to resolve it in a way that that heretofore has never been attempted, and it can lead to some marvelous breakthroughs. But in general, that's the advice I would give you. The last question comes from Nikki.
Hi, Michael. It's Nikki Cahill calling from Northern Ireland. My website is saltandsparkle.com. I'd love to know how to rebuild trust in a situation where someone has lied to your face and then spread spiteful lies about you to other people, and that this is someone that you have to work with on a daily basis, where trust is essential. Thank you so much, Michael, for the chance to interact with you and your podcast and your wonderful material. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You know, it'd be easy in a situation like this to just assume that the other person is an evil person and write them off, or just kind of to come to a position, an unhappy truce, where you don't deal with the issue. And what I would encourage you to do, Nikki, is to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're acting out of some kind of pain or anger that may be completely unrelated to you. And so it may be that you explore it with the other person rather than accusing or confronting, that you seek to understand first and just ask the question, you know, help me understand why you're doing this, or, you know, just to get to know them, to take an interest in them. And that may sound hard, and maybe it's impossible. I don't know. I don't know your situation, and I don't know how long this has gone on. But I would say that working with a person in that situation, and you've got to work with them on a daily basis, and trust is important, that the situation you're describing is untenable. So if you can't work it out, you've got to escalate it. And maybe you go to your supervisor, maybe you go to somebody else, but you've got to confront it. But I wouldn't jump first to confrontation. I would first seek to understand and see if you can try to create some empathy and draw them out. And again, I would recommend the book that I read recommended earlier, which is Just Listen. And it may be that you discover some pieces of the puzzle that help you solve this in a way that's constructive for you, for the other person, and for your organization. Listen, the question I have for you in this episode is, are you in a relationship where the level of trust is not what it should be? What can you do today to begin building or rebuilding trust? And if you'd like to comment on that, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/51. 51 is in episode 51, and leave a comment for me. I'd love to hear from you. Few announcements before we conclude. I'm hitting the road this week for a couple of important speaking engagements. I'm speaking tomorrow in Palm Springs, California at the Invest Financial Corporation Annual Leaders Conference. And I'm going to be talking about platform Get Noticed in a Noisy World, specifically tailored for people in the financial services industry. And this seems to be where I'm speaking a lot these days. Then on Friday, I'll be speaking at the CEO Summit in Dallas, Texas, along with my friends Bob Goff and Francis Chan. And I'll be doing two separate keynote sessions. One, I'm really excited about because I've never given this speech publicly, but I'm going to be talking about why vision is more important than strategy. And then I'll also be speaking on platform there. And then I'll be off the road the next week, and then I'm headed to the SCORE conference in Orlando, Florida, which I love, love, love attending and teaching there. But we're sold out. We do have a waiting list, and if you're interested in getting on that waiting list, there's still a chance that you might be able to get in if we have somebody drop off. But you can find out more at scoreconference.tv, and SCORE is spelled with two R's, scoreconference.tv. Second announcement, if you're considering launching your own platform, you need to start with a self-hosted WordPress blog. It's not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I'll walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. The screencast is absolutely free, and you can find it at michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. Finally, last announcement, my next podcast is going to be on the topic of the single most important question you can ask when bad things happen. And if you've got a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail message at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it just like I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd also be grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you've already done this, thank you so much. I'm very grateful. If you'd like to comment in this episode, please go again to michaelhyatt.com/51 as in episode 51. Go to the show notes, scroll down to the comment section, and then leave a comment, a question, or whatever you like. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count.